And today I'm excited because it's episode 13 and we have our first interview. This is our first interview for the podcast, and it's a great interview because a good friend of ours, a very good
we're going straight to the top of the pile. Yeah, not only killer comic, but just one of the best improvisational comics in the business.
Crowd comic. I mean, he's if you want to know, like, I think what a crowd work comedy is, I mean, Ian Bagg is your man to listen to, and he's our guest today, and he's amazing. He's been doing comedy for a while too. I mean, originally from Canada as well, you know, as well as JJ.
That's what I find really interesting. Yeah. So he's from Western Canada. He's from British Columbia. So I can't wait to dig into this because he's from like the interior of the province of BC. So I was excited to find out because of course I'm from military bases, which is coastal for my father's military. But I know British Columbia well enough that I'm excited to hear a guy who spent his whole childhood in British Columbia.
Yeah,
you know, sharing stories with us about like how he used to spend his family holidays and stuff.
And also very excited to listen to the, you know, because we also talked about so much about like how he started doing comedy and like how life like gave him signs to do comedy, which was great. Like, which I'm a very big believer of that, you know, like Paulo Coelho, The Alchemist, that like whenever you want to do something, life tells you that, you know, gives you the clues to do. Right. And we, in this interview, we listened to Ian gave us like literally like things that they like that he wasn't like life basically told him like, you better go do this. And it was so much exciting to listen to that.
Yeah, man. And I find it interesting too that you've actually been to his hometown in British Columbia and stuff. So that was a great connection as well.
Yeah. We talked about that because he took me there for would do a show. He does a show for his hometown, and he invited me with another comic, and it was great to see where he grew up. And we talk about where he, you know, his whole, you know, his house and his parents and everything, where he's come from. So it was very, very exciting to listen to Ian, you know, talk about his roots.
Yeah, super cool. I don't think we could have asked for a better guest,
first guest.
Yeah, man.
And that's why you were wearing your
this is a Wayne's World.
Because Ian is a very big hockey fan.
He is a big hockey man, so I had to do whatever I could to get into that hockey vibe for him to show him some appreciation.
Are you a big hockey fan? Hokey pokey, but hockey.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the hockey. I love a little ice hockey. It's mandatory. If you're Canadian, you have to be a bit of a hockey fan or they kick you out of the country.
But like, are you a huge fan or like, are you like, I'm a fan?
I think I'm a pretty big fan. I think that's my number one. I mean, I like sports in general, but yes, I am knowledgeable of how the teams are doing and stuff. So yes, I'll say I pay for the NHL channel. Let's put it that way.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. You're above the average fan.
Yeah, I mean, let me ask you, brother, when you're writing or churning out comedy and stuff, do you like a sport sometimes in the background, or do you like music? What do you like to do that helps you maybe concentrate or get to, like, if you're trying to fill it, like, say you're trying to write a sketch or write some stand-up?
Yeah, for that, you know, it was funny, like, when I used to do, you know, when I was in college and high school, I could listen to some music or something, but it's music that's like for writing, you know, like that, like Barnes and Nobles, for example, you know,
right,
stuff like that, like music,
like classical music,
whatever they play, you know, like you don't, I mean, I can't listen to music that I like because then I'm going to be like actually listening or singing to it, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, but and with TV, you know, like, with stand-up and stuff like that, no, I do have to like kind of like concentrate a little bit, you know, because I do, if I am, especially with sports, I can't like be writing something and then watching sports. To me, that's not gonna, I'm gonna be, what, then sports is gonna take over, you know.
So, see, if I'm, see, I mean, I kind of stand with you on that, in that I've started to realize recently, because I have trained myself over the years to think, oh, I can leave a hockey game on and just write and concentrate here. And then if something exciting happens, mm-hmm. then I can take a 30-second break and watch the highlight. I told myself that that's fine. But you know what? You're right. Eventually you realize, no, I got to shut off all distractions.
Yeah.
Maybe have some music on. But even if I play music that I know, then I, all of a sudden I'm lip syncing to it and I'm not getting anything done.
I do not like just being completely quiet that much either. I do like to have like, you know, like when I go to YouTube and just listen, you know, you just put like music to writing or music to study and like, that I don't listen to that because then that I can just, but I do need some kind of like something going. Or sometimes, I mean, I am listening to my sets, you know, or whatever. And then I'm like, then that's kind of like, oh, if I'm writing, for example, bits and stuff like that. I do also want to remind our audience before we start this interview with Ian that to follow us and to subscribe to our channel, you know, and on YouTube and on Twitch, and to follow in our social medias and our personal social medias. You can follow JJ White Snake on Instagram, Twitter, and everything else. And you can follow me at Friends F Ramos Comedy on Instagram and TikTok, and Francisco Ramos on Twitter.
Yeah. Now, before we throw it, I just did want to do one quick follow up with you, though. What is your number one favorite sport? Because you and I have gone to baseball together. Yeah. We've been to the Dodgers together. But of course, and you and I are in a basketball pool together.
So yeah.
These are all sports that I like. I like them all. So, mm-hmm. but I had to pick hockey as my number one. But what I've never asked you, is baseball your number one or is basketball your number one?
I think it's funny because baseball is like my sentimental one because that was my dad's number one sport.
Right.
But I have become more of a basketball fan for the past years. Like I know more, so much more about basketball than baseball. Like in terms of like the players and what's going on and all that stuff. I mean, the fact that I am in a league with you, you know, and other comics that is a basketball league, that tells you all. Like I'm not in any like baseball fantasy or any other else. But like I do have to say that basketball has become my number one sport to watch and to know about. But it's like you, I love sports. I mean, I grew up baseball, I love it. I watch football. I watch. I love tennis. I mean, that's. Yeah. Well, I do have to say sorry. I mean,
well, that's right. You used to teach tennis. Yeah, I love that.
So tennis is my. Joke. Yeah. So tennis is like my number one sport, through. You know, like that's the one that I, you know, love to watch. I mean, but basketball have become...
I used to love that. That was that joke when I first moved here to LA. You were doing the joke about that your kids won't focus.
Yeah, that was one of the first singles in the career. Yeah, that's the focus one. Yeah, it's but yeah, and that happened through. I mean,
that happens from real life.
I did teach tennis. I did. I mean, the focus thing was because of like going in, like same thing happening in high school. Like I would say beach and bitches, you know, like when I was like doing a presentation for like Venezuelan bitches, you know, because it's so, because that's the thing about, you know, like even like what I said before, like the thing about English is like hokey, you know, like just little bullshits. And it's so annoying because in Spanish is five sounds. That's it. But in English, it's like there's like seven ways to say A. There's five ways to say E.
Right. Yeah.
So that's why.
Well, harder adjustment. So yes, to that being said, before we throw it to this man, I will say, yes, huge in hockey. He's even worked on various hockey projects. You know, he's got a hockey podcast. And like, so yes, this is Ian Baggs. Hockey hobby has become you know, it's a big part of his life as well. So I think they're gonna love meeting him. You want to do the throw, man?
Let's do it. This is episode 13 with our first guest, the funny and talented and good friend of ours, Ian Bag. Bayalo.
Hello, Ian. Welcome to the show, man.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me to the show.
Thank you, Ian. Sorry for that
technical difficulties.
You guys don't have to explain anything. We've all been through it. You know, technology is your friend and your enemy at the same time.
It's true. Yeah. It's like you're sometimes like a, I was going to say family, but then I was like, no, that's a little too dark.
No, it's like they read The Art of War. You know what I mean?
They suck you in and then they kill you. They kill you.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially in this day and age and trying to pull this off, we've got so many moving parts, multiple, you know, when you get into streaming or doing a podcast live, everybody's like, you need this in StreamYard and OBS and some studios. And we've done our best to get it together. But it's, you never know what's going to go wrong.
As long as you guys are having fun, that's what counts.
That's true.
Thanks. That's just like a Canadian mom would say.
I'm a Canadian mom.
Just get out there and have fun, boys. Now, because of the glitches, sorry, I'm reading things flipping up on my screen, but am I reading correctly? Francisco, have you not had a chance to grab the – are you all right for the questions?
Yeah, I was just needed to the thing.
Just because, of course, everybody, because we weren't – because not only were we overly ready and then Spectrum ruined our lives, but now we're technically not ready because Spectrum ruined our lives.
Oh, Spectrum. But Ian, I think also, first of all, I think we should introduce Ian to the public for the few people that don't know who he is.
Oh, yeah, man, do it.
For the few people. Well, Ian is a very, very, very famous comedian, good friend of mine. You've been performing for stand-up, I'm going to say around 20 years. Is that?
I would say about 25 years. Yeah.
25 years. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. I figured
that's older than me.
Pandemic. I'm like, I'm going to do it how long?
Yeah,
you're so over 25 years. You're originally from Canada, and then you moved to, but you've been living in LA in the US for a while, and you've done pretty much everything. And we had the chance to compete against each other and then last comic standing where you beat me up very, very hard. Like you were like, it's like we were playing hockey and then you just hit me up like with a stick while we're
right. You're so funny. You're the funny. You're so funny. You're the funniest Francisco I know. And we had fun on that show. It was a great time. Competitions are so stupid, you know. It just like it doesn't make sense at all. I don't know how they do comedy. Like they never do painting,
especially in an art form.
Yeah,
especially in an art form.
Yeah. It should be a museum versus museum.
yeah. That was, and the funny too was like when before we went up, they were trying to like ask me questions so I could like go at Ian. It's kind of like, so are you gonna go after him? Like, what do you have? And I was like, no, he's my friend. Hopefully he does great. I mean, whatever. But it's like, no. But they were trying to like, you know, stir the pot, and I was like, no, you know,
they wanted drama.
They wanted drama. I said he killed my father. I put all that. He's a
that's why they picked you. Yeah, I figured. I should have gone for that. I was like, yeah, he killed my dad. Yeah.
I think it was so funny on that whole thing. Do you remember when they made us fill out we were going to get a person to help us, you know, our mentor. They were going to give us a mentor
and they gave
a big sheet of list of names, like from all the way from Bill Cosby, you know.
Yeah. Down like to, even Richard Pryor. He's like, isn't he dead? No. Yeah. Like, well, he might show up.
Yeah. There was 50 names, and we had to check off the ones that we wanted most. And then when it came to getting your mentor, it was just the producer of the show.
Yeah.
I was just like, they didn't even try. Like,
it was just false hope, was it?
Yeah, it was just false hope. Like, it was so stupid. and then I remember she asked me if I wanted help, and I was like, no, thanks.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
Okay. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. No, I got this. I don't need your help. Yeah, but I've got a Grammy Award. That's nice. I'll do this myself.
Yeah, because it was funny. Like they gave you. I think it was kind of like the when they're looking at you, like the police. You know, the police are watching you from like the glass to see who they pick. Because it's like, are they gonna pick the producer or are they gonna pick somebody else? It's like, yeah, but if you give us like 50 choices, it's like, yeah, you're gonna pick other people. You know,
it was so many choices of sandwiches, and then they were mad that we didn't want grilled cheese.
Oh God.
Yeah, no, it was fun. I mean, I wish the only thing that I do, I wish I would have gotten to be able to tour with Ian and the guys, because that would have been fun. Because I mean, it was like in a bus, and I never would have, I mean, never done that. So it would have been fun just to be like, felt like a rock star in a way, like a band.
It was.
You know what I mean? Did only the final five go on tour together? Yes.
Yeah,
Francisco. So you just barely missed it, man.
Barely missed it.
Yeah. Because I made it to the top 10, you know, and then Ian killed me.
You should have just had your own tour going next to them. Take the who are the five that got eliminated? Just have a rival tour. I'm surprised there's not a booker waiting in the wings going, that's what I'll do. They can have the top five. I'll take 6 through 10.
They should have did 6 through 10 and called it next year's winners.
Here you go. That works for all of us. Ian, man, we're really excited, as you know, and we're really thankful that you're willing to do this, because as you're aware, you're our first interview. You're our first guy.
Really?
You know? Yeah. Yes. So you're the man. You're taking our interview virginity.
Oh, that's thanks, guys.
Pretty much.
Yeah, we couldn't have had a better. We thought
at threesome virginity.
Oh
yeah, man. We thought
not the threesome I was thinking of, but
yeah.
I love it. I love it. So you. This is the first interview you guys are doing, and this is the first power outage you've had, and you guys are living in a youth hostel right now while you travel.
Yeah, our producer is actually on the roof holding up coat hangers, and he has a cable in his mouth, and he's doing.
Yeah, we're in a band, right? In an actual like Scooby Doo van, you know, or like I'm in the seat in the front, and Shag is in the back, you know.
I'm just making it look like I'm somewhere else.
Yeah,
we're beside each other. I love it. Have you guys done that? The jam van or whatever it is. Have you done that show? Where it's
I've done that show. Yeah, it's really cool. I like it.
It's really fun. It's pretty fun.
I think that show should be just be kept after this. You know, like that's a cool show. You know, there's some that like the setup is really well done. That like you could do it in LA or in Los Angeles because of the weather. So yeah, I really like.
Ahmed has the one that's in Venice that you should do afterwards too. It's really cool.
Or the pool. Yeah, that's a good one too. That's the thing about LA. You can do so many outdoor shows, you know, because it's the weather permits it, you know.
Yeah, it's the rest of the world is pretty. It's pretty. LA is pretty special, and we should be a little bit more thankful when it's windy out. I don't know if I can perform.
I know. Like my biggest complaint, like I was telling you earlier, I was like, I haven't done a gig indoors in a year. That's my COVID complaint. I haven't been under a roof doing comedy. Like, what else are you gonna do? Oh, I've been doing it by pools and on patios and in parking lots.
Next to cars.
And it's funny because it's every gig that you would have said no to in February 2020. February 2021, you're like, yep, when do I have to be there?
Man, sign me up. It's like I was saying too, like I'm getting old school adrenaline kicks now too, off of mediocre gig. I mean, come on, we're playing the cars, and we've got people with clackers reaching out their windows and clacking. So it may not be ideal, but we're so starved to pour our guts out on stage that even after these gigs, we're walking around with all this adrenaline going, oh, that was great.
I'm in show business. It's weird to say I'm in show business after that. Man. In a parking lot. You're a homeless guy with a squeegee.
I think that's one of the things that separate, like, now, like when I especially when doing those shows that are in the park, like the only thing that separates us from like homeless is the mic. If we don't have the mic, it's just we're just some random guy yelling stuff in the park, which is every homeless guy.
just a dude shouting in a park, man. Just a dude
shouting in a park, which my dad predicted many years ago.
Ian, I don't know if you know much about our podcast here, but basically, we talk shit, and we're going to talk a bit about traveling in the arts is the bent that we lean towards. So you don't have to weigh in with any kind of opinions on the latest politics or anything like that. Well, we've slowly got some eyes coming to us in the feed now. I see. So thank you for coming back. If you did give up on us 20 minutes ago. And I'll let you know, we're about to fire the questions at Ian. I'm gonna lay it out to you, big guy. Those of you who are watching in the chat, as we've done the last couple of weeks, feel free to write some questions that you'd like. We will get to them after we get to these questions. If they're, you know, if they write, we'll have our producer, Brian. He'll be selecting the cream of the cream if you have any questions. If not, we are fully stacked with some questions for Ian here. Now, the way it's going to work, Ian, is we've got 7 questions here. Okay. Francisco and I are each going to rotate. We're not looking for long answers on the first pass around. We're just looking for a brief, like the destination or what was up, just in a sentence. That'll allow anybody watching at home to go, oh, he just mentioned Boston or whatever. I want to mention Boston. Okay. So that's what we'll do, is we're going to fire these questions at you, and then we're going to circle back around and we're going to dig deeper into the questions and get to know Ian Bagg. Does that sound cool, man?
Yeah, I love it. It's a first round of interviews. If I pass, there's a chance I might go to the second round.
Yeah, it could go forever. And then Spectrum will pull the plug on us.
And then somebody will pay their bill.
Right in the middle. So,
well, cool. Then let's just start.
Right on.
Ian, so I'm going to ask you the first question. And yeah, just give like a brief answer for this one.
Okay.
In your career, in your 25-year career, what destination was the hardest to get to?
The hardest to get to? Nome, Alaska. Nome, Alaska.
Nome, Alaska. All right, cool.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. From Fairbanks to Nome, Alaska.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, that sounds epic. All right, buddy. Now, this is a theoretical situation. A friend has invited you to tour with them, and it's the perfect tour. Who is the friend, and what is the destination for this perfect tour?
Oh, my God. This has already happened? Can I use it? It already happened?
You can want to do it again.
Sure. Yeah, I'd love to. China. China was the destination, and the friend that invited me to go to China, Jim Gaffigan.
Oh,
cool. Awesome, man.
Yeah.
That sounds like a fun. Did you bring some hot packets?
No, we didn't.
Okay.
They don't have them in China.
They make them and then they ship them back to America.
Awesome. All right. This is the next question. What kind of travel did you do as a kid for family holidays?
Oh, family holidays were, I grew up in Terrace, British Columbia. My father was from Trail, British Columbia. And we'd go to Trail every summer for a couple weeks with my parents. And then they would leave us with my grandparents. And we'd hang out on the family farm. Also, it was a farm. And it was also a pick apart, like a car park. So we'd just be playing around there all summer, and they had a pool, and we had to do all sorts of work because my grandparents were from the old school of kids work.
Right.
That's right. And then I go to hockey school for a week.
Oh,
hockey school.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, like I am a military kid, but I spent some time in BC, and I remember Trail a lot because they had a great baseball team.
Yeah,
that's how I remembered Trail growing up. I was always
kids team, right? They go to the kids World Series, right?
Yeah, you guys got skills from there. All right, buddy. Has an airline ever lost your luggage, and if so, or lost anything of yours, and if so, which destination were you heading towards?
Oh my god! They have lost my luggage, and it's been United and Alaska, and it's on the way home. And then they send it through one of those services. That's one of those services, and a van that's not very good looking. Looks like it would pick up children.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Next question. What was your first big move for the sake of your comedy career? Obviously you moved from, you know, Terrace to the U.S. to New York, but I don't know if there's something else.
My first one was Terrace to Vancouver. I started in Vancouver, so that was my first move was Terrace to Vancouver.
Cool. And
I can tell you more, but we'll save that for later.
Oh yeah, no, we'll talk more. We'll wrap up.
We'll save that.
Yeah, man. And buddy, what's your favorite recreational thing to do when you're on the road? What do you like to get up to?
I make sure when I'm on the road that I go to a gym that's not in the hotel. That's the first thing I do. And also, I love sporting venues. So I go find the sporting venues to look at their architecture.
Okay, cool. Okay. And then have you ever felt your life was at risk in your travels?
Afterwards?
Yeah, after a fiery gig.
Yeah, after it's been a couple times afterwards, I look back on it and went, oh, well, that's probably a situation I shouldn't have had myself in. Once was in Victoria. I was, I'll tell that story. I'll tell it later. I'll tell it later because it's more than a paragraph.
Awesome. Right on. Yeah, no, that's fantastic. That gives us our answers so we know which parts of the world. I mean, there we are. We're all over the world here. We've got, the first answer is Alaska, which I can only imagine takes forever to get to. So we asked you what destination was the hardest to get to. I assume by hard, are we talking long or are we talking hard because, you know, you had to go on mule part of the way or something?
Oh no, you know what's funny is after I said it, all I could think was, that's not the toughest one that I've ever had.
My toughest one was
the Montreal Comedy Festival back to Vancouver. That is definitely the toughest one I've ever done, and the reason was that I hitchhiked from Toronto to Vancouver after getting from Montreal to Toronto.
Didn't they offer to pay for the transport?
Oh, I wasn't there. I wasn't there because I got into the comedy festival. I went there because Craig Campbell had gotten into the comedy festival, and I had spent the summer co-featuring for $35 a show and had like $700 to my name. And I was dating this girl at the time, and she told me, "You have to come home. We have to have a talk." And I was young enough that I didn't know that meant she was going to break up with me. And I could have just put a couple extra quarters into the phone, and she could have broken up with me. Instead, I hitchhiked on the ride with these guys all the way to Vancouver, and then got dumped when I got out the door.
Oh man! All the way home, you were probably like, "My lady needs to see me." Apparently, we have to have a talk, and everybody's like, "Do you know what that means, man?" I don't know.
And how did you hitchhike? I mean, like, that's such a like.
I just met these guys, and they were. I was like, I gotta go to Vancouver, and they're like, we're thinking about going to Vancouver, and I talked them into going to Vancouver, and they drove me into Vancouver. It was three of us in a pickup truck all the way from Toronto to Vancouver, and it was like a little Datsun pickup truck, and sometimes some of us would sleep in the back, you know, and that three of us, and it was pretty stupid. And then she bugged me as soon as I got back. I thought I was going to be Dudley Do-Right and save the day. It did not happen.
I do think, that span from the west of Canada. Hello, Alex, by the way, in the chat. Hi, Alex. If you have any questions for Fantastic Comedian Ian Bagg, feel free to write them down and we'll get to them after we're finished with these questions. But I was going to say, do you think, because most of my hitchhiking experiences, I don't know if it was my age as well, are between Vancouver and like the prairies.
Yes.
Is that the hitchhiking hotbed of the world then, do you think? Like, is that where...
I think
Canadians love to on the West Coast. I think
it's West Coast, even in America. I think it's that Seattle, Oregon, all the way down to California. I think people still hitchhike a bit, but it's different in Canada because there's no freeways. It's all actual roads, so it's actually easier to hitchhike.
Mm. I mean, I never hitchhike. Yeah, I don't like that. I mean, I came from Venezuela. That's, you want to get kidnapped? Like, are you crazy? Like, why would you do that? Like, I would never get in a car.
My mom was not happy with me. I can tell you that much. It was, she was a little annoyed. So,
yeah, I still haven't told my mom that I did some hitchhiking in my time. And like, I think I worked in Banff when I was 18 and 19. Mm-hmm. And it was just prime. I went to Canmore and Calgary and stuff, you know, and we would hitchhike. Into Calgary.
That might be the hitchhiking capital of the world.
That stint
right there, Banff to Canmore.
Yeah, I'd say so. Because we did it frequently, and also picking up hitchhikers. Me and my friends back in the day, we met a lot of really interesting. I don't know. It was just that age that we were at to meet those really interesting people that you're going to meet on that back road from Canmore to Banff. You know, so it's
Francisco is not happy with either of us.
No, I mean, it's like, why? That's crazy. Like, I mean, anybody could just get killed. I mean,
I know, especially in Canada, all that snow, all the body hiding areas.
There's nothing so easy. Body hiding areas.
Yeah. I mean, it's obviously like, I don't know, has that, Would you still do it right now?
No, it's that age. It's nothing's going to change at that age. Yeah. Now I don't even like it when people like wash my car. You know.
Yeah. It's definitely that activity for when you feel immortal.
Yeah.
You know that point. So I think we're all old enough now. We've all had a taste of our mortality that we're like, all right, I don't need randomness of strangers involved in this life. Yeah. I sprained my knee getting out of bed this morning. I sure as hell can't fend off an attacker.
He won't give me time to stretch before I fight back.
Yeah, man. I absolutely love your answer to number two. So we were asking you, like, so we're giving you your ideal tour. Obviously, it would be great if it happened again, but you're immediately referring to something that's already happened, which sounds cool as shit, man. So you toured China with Jim Gaffigan.
Yeah, we did three cities. We did Beijing, we did Shanghai, and I can't remember the name of the other place, but it was a week and a half, and he had his first baby. You know, baby came along.
Does he have like 10 kids?
Yeah, now he's just done nothing but breed. It's very bizarre. He's seen how few kids they had, and he's like, "I'll up you," and he just kept going. it was so much fun. Suddenly I'm in Shanghai with Gaffigan, and he's just becoming famous, and I'm just having fun, and he's just like, "Do what you want," and I'd go out there and be stupid, and he'd have a great time, and I'd have a great time, and there was translators in the audience. It was great. And then we went to Beijing and we hung out there for a couple of days, and the day that we were supposed to go to the Great Wall, I went on an underground that night before, like just tour of the city with these girls, and we ended up in like, it almost seemed like a Vietnam movie. We're in this place, we're fighting on this underground place, and I got back to the hotel and had missed the ride to the Great Wall. So I ended up partying with white girls in China and missed the wall. That's what happened.
It happens when you're having fun.
I was still that around that age. Just I would still hitchhike then too. So.
Yeah. You hitchhiked to the wall, to the Great Wall.
Yeah, I should catch up.
So you were partying with white girls in China.
I know. Pretty impressive, right?
You didn't go for the Chinese.
No. These white girls from Boston or something.
I think that's the thing. When you're like in a foreign country and you find somebody that at least even the language, or you're like, oh, you're like, this is like, all right, I guess we're going to meet our friends for this part of the vacation, you know?
And it was funny because in my head, my mom's from Australia. So in my head, and she always told me as a kid, when you fly to a country, always take the national airline. You'll learn more. And that's what I was thinking in my head. I should be white girls. So,
some interesting advice. What were the venues like at this point? If Gaffigan was just blossoming, I just remember when I was in Shanghai. I remember it was in an American bar. It was like a three-star American bar where everybody was putting on their American accents if they weren't, and the venue was in there, but it was only about a 300 seater. So this must have been bigger. I'm assuming
it was about that size. And I would say, I think one of the gigs was at an American something.
Yeah, is it like, bar. Yeah, and they've got the whole downstairs is like a restaurant, I remember. And then the venue, I think, was on the second floor. And they got like amazing cover bands from all around Asia.
Right.
That just blow your mind with perfect covers of any 80s band and stuff.
It was insane. Yeah, it was fun. I also did the Middle East. Who did I do the Middle East with? I had a good time. I went to Bengal.
Saddam Hussein.
So no, I didn't do that. I did. It's right near India, and I'm blanking on it. And I'm feeling embarrassed, and I'm blanking on it.
Bahrain. No. Are you trying to think of the venue?
Trying to think of the country. It's Bangladesh. Thank you very much. Oh my goodness, I fell apart there. Somebody put me in a hospital. Bangladesh. Yeah. And I remember having just a great time there too. And it was one of those silly gigs that I got away with more than I should have, just being innocent. You know, like I remember saying, I don't get the Muslim men when they get older, they put red in their beard, and they all look like orangutans. They went nuts. They went nuts. They were like, loved it, Tom.
You must have felt leading up to that punchline that I might have to get out of Bangladesh quickly.
Yeah,
after I hit this one.
It was one of those. I'm like, oh, I've gone too far. Turned out it was all going okay. So I was like, oh, this is one. Yeah. So yeah, that was nice. Gaffigan was the fun one because it was Gaffigan, right? So and it was what I loved about it was he was just becoming famous, and I was just kind of getting into my stride. And that's the time you lose friendships with people, right? Not that you're like against each other, but you get so busy, you guys end up going off in different directions. And we're just coming to that. Yeah. And that was one of the last ones that, you know, I got to hang with a friend and really work with a friend. So,
yeah, there's a specific sentence that I've heard out of all of my friends when they're in that sweet spot of just getting busy and like, and trying to now capitalize on the opportunities that come away. And the sentence is always, I don't have room for new friends. And I'll feel like comedians. I'll say that at some point. I've got enough. I've got my collection.
I gotta start saying that.
it's funny. You don't get to really hang with your old friends though. You because everybody's off working. So you know, and doing different projects. So.
Yeah. Ships in the night, man.
Yeah.
That's why I really miss that's what's great about festivals, isn't it? Because when we're at a festival, we're locked in for the period of the festival, and you're like dogs off their leash at a park. You know, you don't have to run for a plane, train, or automobile anymore, and your buddies are all there to drink with.
Yeah,
it's kind of like the improv used to be that, and kind of the comedy store is now, where everybody kind of run into each other, you know?
Yeah, where like you go in there while you're in town, you go do a spot, and you see somebody you haven't seen in a while, you hang out for a little bit, and then boom, you go back.
When we're working so much, we kind of pass on those spots because you just want to rest, you know, when you're traveling so much. So.
True. Yeah. But I think now we'll be back. I think now with after all this pandemic, definitely. There's gonna. I mean, I think now every comic just to be in a club. You know, that's gonna be like, okay, fine, I'll just be there. I don't have a spot. That's fine. I just want to hang out for a little bit. And then, you know,
I just don't want to go home. I don't want to see my home.
I saw it too much.
Yeah, entirely, man. I mean, that's what we were like at the Magic Castle when we were there. We're just kind of bouncing off each other. There's all this energy, and I'm like, it's not even a green room. It's just a back alley. Outside, it's just a back alley outdoors by a parking lot with a bunch of cars in it.
That's actually a guy doing heroin. Yeah, well, that is not a comedian. That's actually a guy doing heroin.
Yeah, well, it is Hollywood, so there was those guys as well. So you know, we just you know, it's very colorful and eventful.
All right, the third question that we had was, what kind of travel did you do as a kid for family holidays? And your answer was to your grandparents' house, or getting dropped up at your grandparents' house, right?
Yeah. So my grandparents,
Trail BC,
they had this big land, and my dad grew up with three sisters, and they all lived in that area still. So that's where my cousins were. So it was kind of fun for us to hang out. But my grandparents, I don't think were fond of children, to be honest with you. And I just remember doing a lot of work while I was there, like having to dig up the water lines every time I was there.
This is great. You had manual labor grandparents.
Absolutely.
My my grandparents were the same thing. Every time they would take me and my sister, because we were the oldest of the cousins, to the beach house, all we had to is just work. It's literally like we get there and it's just like, go rake the leaves, go wash the car, go do all this. And like, we had to do it. If not, like we couldn't eat or we couldn't go out. You know, it was like prison.
And they had a pool, and the treat was you got to swim in the pool. And then you realize as you get older, oh, that was our bath. You know, after we did all the work, we clean off in the pool. So, but I had one uncle there, and he was a little doo-doo. He married my aunt, and he had gone to Vietnam. And
was she your aunt already when he married her, or did she become your aunt? Are you letting us in on a thing here?
No, she was my aunt. and then he married into the family. It wasn't like my uncle and my aunt married each other.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, that's what I
was. Yeah, I was like, wow. Okay, I didn't want to say anything. I was like, okay.
My dad's side of the family is so weird. I wouldn't be surprised. Anyway, so but he carried an M16 with him everywhere, and this is in Canada. Like he would always be in the car with us at all times, and we weren't allowed to wake him up. We weren't, because he tried to choke me out. It was one of those things, and he had scars all over him, and he would teach us things. A couple of days he would enjoy us, and he would start teaching us scuba diving, and then we weren't allowed to talk to him for a week after that. So bizarre.
he's like, I put in my time. That's enough.
It was so weird. And I remember I got in trouble one summer because I remember probably being about 13 or 14 and going down there, you know, one of the last times. And they're like, oh, you have to weed the garden. I'm like, oh, I have to weed the garden. Okay. So I just pulled everything out of the garden. Like, I'm just like, I don't know what your plants and what your weeds. I just took it all out. And everybody like, he's not coming back here ever again. He's a bad man. He ruined grandpa's onions.
That's how you do it, though. That's how you make sure you never get asked to do it again.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not dumb.
That's a good move. I was like, I'm not getting paid for this. How am I supposed to know the garden? You know, what am I supposed to, just like, you told me to just ripped everything out. That's what I did.
That's what I did. You didn't have rules. You made up rules. Now that I did that, now you have rules. But before you didn't have rules.
Yeah.
What kind of journey? Like, so I'm guessing this is car, like from terrace to trail.
Mm-hmm.
This is obviously by car, but what kind of journey are we talking? Is it as simple as, because I'm trying to think on the map. Is it like a good 4 hours or something?
Oh no. From Terrace to Prince George is 8 hours, 8 to 10 hours, depending on traffic,
right,
on a 2-lane highway. Right. And then you take a right at Prince George and you go all the way down to Cache Creek, which I think is about 5 or 6 hours. And then you take a left at Cache Creek and you go, no, I'm lying. So, Cache Creek, and then you have to come back to that. You got to get to Kelowna. When you get to Kelowna, you go from Kelowna to Red Rock or something Rock, and then you turn down there and get to Grand Forks. And from Grand Forks, you go to Rosalind, and then from Rosalind, you'd cut around to Trail, and then just outside of Trail was a place called Fruitvale, which used to make me laugh. I'm like,
of course.
We'd go to Fruitvale, and that's where my grandparents live. So,
wow. After all those directions, I'm going to hitchhike.
Yeah.
Going to get lost if I drive.
Yeah.
It was about 2 days before it would take us to get there.
That is epic. Right. That's that's obviously a lot further than I thought. I mean, I lived in Chilliwack and on Vancouver Island growing up. But obviously, never. I made it into Kelowna. I remember Kelowna was like the big city, I think, if you're in the interior and stuff. Like I was saying, that's what I remember of Trail, is that best athletes in British Columbia, I think, come out of there and kick our asses all the time.
In baseball and also in hockey, in the Trail Smoke Eaters won the gold medal at the Olympics in like 1950 something or something like that. They were one of the last teams that was sent just as a club team to the Olympics.
Oh, wow.
All right. So, so there's something in the water there, or all the men of Trail are like your grandfather, and they're running the show down there, churning out these athletes.
Yeah, basically. Cesar Maniego's from there, and I think a lot of the it's a big Italian family. I'm trying to think. He married Cassie Campbell. Who married Cassie Campbell? Tambellini? No, is it Tambellini? Tambellinis are from there too. A lot of kind of Canucks people. It's very, very big hockey. Sorry, Francisco, we brought up hockey.
Yeah, I thought I was gonna say the Sopranos, but
the Sopranos, yeah.
and Prince George, if I'm correct, is kind of a land that's lost in time. Prince you know, it's George. The it's hippie it's hippie no. islands, right? It's the hippie.
No,
islands.
It's more a right wing island. But it's it's Hell's Angels that don't ride their motorbikes except for 2 months a year because it's snowing all the time there. You know, it's the weirdest. It's Hell's Angels that can't ride motorbikes, so they have to put them someplace that doesn't get much.
there's your directions. You need to get the Trail, turn right at the Hell's Angels who don't ride the motorbike. keep going 5 hours down the road.
And I remember they used to have this huge wooden statue, this monster, Prince George, and it was the logging capital of BC, and he was made out of logs. Right. Yeah.
Cool.
All right. Yeah, classy stuff up there. Man.
But it was the smoke. Prince George was the smoke. That's where you went to get things if you needed things. So
yeah, I'm trying to. My parents came back with some totem poles. We had some totem poles in our back garden and stuff. And I thought they bought them. Oh, am I thinking? I'm thinking St. George's Island, aren't I? That's the British Columbia island that's lost in time, and it's just full of hippies who are making.
I know you're talking. Yeah. No, down there. Yeah. Yeah. Those are where all the hippies are, and up there is where the people all punch each other.
Yeah, yeah, it's a big difference. You don't want to show up thinking it's the hippies and going, "Hey, I'm here." And then,
By the way, I do have to say that Ian actually took me to his hometown for a show, and it was great. It was so much fun to perform and to see where he lived, his house, where his room, you know, where he grew up, and everything.
Right.
And I got paid on smoked salmon.
Smoke salmon, okay, with smoke salmon up there.
Nah,
yeah,
I did get paid, but no, they gave us smoke salmon.
I do. Back in the old days, I used to do a fundraiser every year, and I'd take two comics up with me. And you and Matt Fultron came with me that year.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that was the last one. Was it the last one? I may have done one after that. I don't know.
Well, hopefully it wasn't because of us. They're like, we can't do this.
They loved you guys.
Those guys took all our salmon. And our women.
$8 salmon. They talked to our women and took our salmon.
Well, you know, the salmon's not cheap too, Francisco. So no. you did pretty good for yourself, man.
Yeah.
No, it was great. I loved it. It was great.
Yeah. What was your first impression when you arrived in Terrace? When you like, what did you think?
It was fun. It was like it felt like Canada. You know, like it was kind of cold and like, but it was like a small town, but like it was snowing, but it was nice, but everybody was so nice. And like, you know, just everybody was just so nice and helpful. And I really liked it.
And the airport is, when you get to the airport, you're like, oh, I hope we're not in the town.
Yeah.
Right.
We had to get into the little plane. That's always a sign when you're like, when you have to transfer to the little plane, then you go like, oh, okay, I'm going. Mm-hmm.
When you're getting in the puddle jumper.
Yeah, you haven't lived until you've been in one of those small planes in weather.
Yeah, I don't know if one of those small little puddle jumpers is ever fly smoothly, even in ideal weather.
No.
They're just meant to you know, be thrown around by God.
Yeah, and young pilots.
Yeah, man.
If I survive, I fly the big ones.
Yeah. Someday. All right, right on. Well, this brings us we're up to question number four now. I was asking if an airline had ever lost your luggage, and where were you going? And you mentioned that it was you mentioned the airlines, United and Alaska Airlines, and you were on your way home, which immediately I thought that's a bonus. The fact that it didn't jump into mind of the time that you got screwed going to a destination, because at least when you're coming home and they lose your luggage, you know that you can go home. I'm assuming you didn't have all of your clothes with you.
I didn't have the keys in there.
Oh, that would suck. Oh yeah, that's a shit. Yeah, man. How did you get back in your house?
I don't know if am I like you guys. I rarely check bags. Only in the last couple of years have I started checking things when I take merch. I'll check a merch bag, but there's something in there, and if that gets lost, that gets lost. I don't care. But
the stuff
I need, I don't check. I just make sure I can take it with me. So I'm sure it was I was late and I had to check a bag or something at that times. And I remember just the big thing I remember is, oh, it's got my stuff. I'm home, but I don't have my stuff, because that's still your stuff. But it's you don't really need it, like you say, because most comedians, and I'm sure you're like me, had your home stuff and your travel stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I still had stuff. I had basically everything, you know, so it wasn't that big of a deal. Airlines have been pretty good. I think airlines, for the most part, for the lost luggage, they get a bad rap, I think.
I think so. And did you get it? You said you got it back from a van, like a Meet the Parents, kind of like.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those wait for delivery. I've had to do it here in LA as well a couple times, actually. I feel like it happens a lot on the way to LAX. But right. Yeah, you're just waiting. I think the van also takes passengers. And it's one of those ones that loads up at the airport with like 8 passengers who are all paying $25 each. And they don't realize that they're all going to different parts of Los Angeles.
Right.
And then, because I tried it once when I first moved here, and it took me like almost 2 hours.
I did it too.
You got back on the bus as soon as you got home because you had to leave again. That took you that long.
Basically, those things are like, it's like a private bus. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing as a bus, but you know you're just gonna have to wait there until you get to your turn. You know, but it's just less time in a way, and also they drop you like by your house or close to your house, so it's not like a. But it is a bus because you have to like. Wait for like
I think
2 hours.
Uber and Lyft have crushed those things. They've crushed those.
Oh yeah, they destroy those. I mean, even cabs. I don't know, like, why? Who's taking cabs anymore? Do you take cabs? Like
people that don't have credit cards or bank accounts. Those are the people that take cabs.
Yeah. When I moved here from London, I was in Britain, and you can frequently take a cab because you can hail in the streets in Britain.
Right.
And I moved here instinctually thinking this is the way the world is. And that was, and Uber hadn't started yet. So yeah, my like standing out in the middle of the street in Los Angeles, trying to flag down a taxi is an impossible.
Looking like a lunatic. Look at this guy waving at every cab that goes.
It's another Canadian just being friendly to everybody.
Hi, good. Hey, how are you? Nice to see you. How are you?
Hey there, brain guts in the chat. I see your question, and we're talking with Ian Bagg here. He's regaling us with tales for the road and stuff, but we'll get to you. That is a good question, man. I'm sure we will have a minute to ask it of him afterwards. I know he'll probably enjoy answering that one. It brings us up to question 5.
What was your favorite recreational activity while on the road? And you mentioned going to arenas or sports arenas to see the architecture.
Yeah.
So the big
and
thing,
another very important thing that he mentioned, sorry, is that the gym thing, which I thought is very interesting. You won't do it in a hotel. You don't. So even though you've arrived to your hotel, you don't want to go.
Well,
to the
I mean,
hotel
to be fair, gym. To be fair, hotel gym sucks. I mean, it's always like, have you ever been to the, you know, you always go like, oh, we got a gym. And then you go there and it's like a treadmill from the 1950s, like the first one.
Also,
and I'm like,
with a family. There's a family in there trying. This is weird. Look at these things. These are weird. I'll try it all out. But it's not that. It's as comedians, we can get stuck inside our hotels. We can. So if you make sure that you find a gym in your neighborhood to go to, it gets you out of the hotel, gets you for a walk, and it's good for your mental health. So that's why I try to do that.
And also it works too for material too, because you might see something that you can, you know, use it for the show at night. And be like, hey, I was at the gym. And
a little thing about the town or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's good because we have to mentally as comedians, we have to make sure that we don't get lost in the wormhole because it can affect all of us.
That's a good thing to remind me of because I actually have never done that with a gym. I go for a walk or something or get some food, but I always drag it. Actually, Francisco and I have had a discussion about this because I always bring it back to the hotel room and to eat. Like that's kind of my experience in the city.
I don't mind that. He just eats it in the bed, which I'm like, there's a perfectly good desk there.
It's not a good desk. You're sitting in a corner. It's a little wedged thing in a cubicle. You don't want to eat like you're in an office.
You don't need where you sleep.
So,
I think that's good to take it back to the hotel room or whatever. I think the other thing is better. I think, you know.
But I do say too, I have done the whole gyms, going to a different gym. I also, what I do, because sometimes I don't have time. Most of the times it's like one nighter, so I don't have time to like check. But I do always try to go to a restaurant that is from that place, not like a chain restaurant.
Right.
Or something
that's a great idea.
I can just to eat something that's like, I don't want to eat, you know, the same, you know, Panera, you know, which is, we do it all the time. And I'm like, okay, now let me try to find some if I can or if I have time. Yeah.
That's great.
And you also mentioned about the architecture.
Well, my favorite type of architecture is sporting event, like stadiums or theaters or whatever. I like to go see what they look like. And it started in Rome years ago. You know, I wanted to go to that stadium there, and the Colosseum. And I'm just like, oh, this is basically what we do.
It's
entertainment, whether it be sports or something. And it's just incredible the amount of people that you can get into the buildings. And how many of the buildings still are very similar. They're very similar, the stadiums, to this day. So I just like to go look at it and see. And
But you don't go to the events? You just go outside?
Well, I'll go outside. But if I can go to the event, I'll go to the event. And when it comes to hockey, I'll go for 20 minutes. If I can only go to the first
period
and then have to go do the show, I'll do it, you know, just to check it out. And I'll walk around the whole time and, you know, try to, you know, talk to somebody that works in the building and see some stuff and see what kind of, you know, history is from that place, you know?
That's cool. That's a cool idea.
Yeah, that's an awesome idea. I mean, that's what I love to do that myself as well. I want to collect every city's like sports team or sporting event. I love going there. Like to your question of Francisco that you were asking, I went and watched the Milwaukee Bucks play at home for 10 minutes. That's all I had was 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get in and check out, like, because that Pabst Arena or whatever in that whole little city block area in Milwaukee, really awesome. And I was like, it was like $20 or whatever. The guy wouldn't let, I tried the whole, but I'm a comedian. I'm on next door. Can you just, I just want to look at your venue. And he wouldn't do it. So I had to drop the 20 to watch the Milwaukee Bucks for 10 minutes.
But that's cool because it's worth it. Yeah.
Yeah, but it also gives you a vibe of what the people are like in that town, you know, watching them cheer.
Yes.
Yeah, also, 100%.
That's another thing, too, that also Ian has done for me, which is in Vegas. You know, he has given me the chance to go to events there, like the, what was it? Absinthe. You know, he got me tickets to that. And then he got me tickets, which was a funny thing. The one that you gave, the other one that you got me tickets to, which was a new one.
Atomic Swoon.
Which that was so funny because
Atomic Saloon?
Atomic Saloon. Okay. What's funny about it is like me, it was a buddy of mine was visiting. And I'm like, hey, we're going to go see a van. And I was thinking it was like Absinthe. I was like, there's going to be like girls, you know, it's kind of like just hot girls, just like, you know, dancing and all this stuff. And then we get to this one, and also we had like we got some gummies, so we were already like high.
Fantastic!
And then we're like, so they sat us like they sat us behind. This is a stage, so they sat us behind the stage, so you could see. So then we're on the stage, but we're behind
and on gummies.
Uh-huh. On gummies, and then all of a sudden the thing starts, and it's like a cowboy, like a sexy cowboy, just like. You know, like showing his body and stuff like that. And then the next one comes, like two cowboys. And then my buddy's looking at me like, what the fuck? like we were laughing.
I could come out to you.
Yeah. Like we're starting. I'm like, I mean,
there's some really hot women in that one too, though.
It was, no, but what's funny is like, there's two hot girls come out and we're like, oh, nice. And then they come out and then they were dressed as nuns, so they never took their clothes off. We're like, oh,
until the end. Did you stay for the whole thing? Because they're at the end.
Yeah, yeah. We watched. It was it was fun. It was just so funny. And also, like, we're behind, so the guys would shake their asses, and we just see their
asses. Oh wow! You got a hell of a show.
Yeah, we got a good shit.
JJ, you must have seen Absinthe. Have you seen Absinthe?
Yeah, I've been to Absinthe a couple times, and
good.
Yeah, and then
it's a great show.
Yeah, I mean, a comedian, but do you know Phil Nickel?
Yeah, one of the last time he just auditioned for that, right?
Yeah, he flew out from Britain. I mean, he's an amazing entertainer. He'd be great. He'd be great in Absinthe and stuff. But,
I want to say that was last February, and then within 2 weeks that we were locked down after he auditioned for it, too. So.
Man, so yeah, maybe.
What did he audition for, the main guy?
Host. They need a comedian as the host, I would say.
Maybe
he auditioned for the ass wiggler.
So oh my god,
I'm sure he's capable of doing that too. Absinthe is great. I mean, I love that whole concept of little 5-minute pieces, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. like a whole cast of crazily talented people with their. I mean, it's not a 5-minute skill.
It's always fun to see all these lovely.
Yeah.
And it's always fun to see, I think, just to see other art forms as an audience member, because we always perform it. So we never get to see the other side. So it's always good to see the kind of like, oh, yeah, there's.
Is
it something for you guys? Something that I've noticed during this is how I was kind of ignoring life. Like I need to take breaks more than I was, because I was turning and burning a lot.
100%. Like I think even what you were saying about like just shows and stuff like that, it's stuff that you like was like so important. Now I'm like, it wasn't that. We want to perform, want to work and stuff like that, but you also need to enjoy your life. You know what I mean? Especially with the people.
Some clubs we really needed to say no to. Some you're just like, oh yeah, you didn't need to treat me like that. I should have said no. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I think I learned that a lot too from this, to just be more mindful of like saying no, like life, about like enjoying the stuff that you want to do, you know, like not feeling that you have to force yourself. It's like, because there's some, like you were saying, Ian, there's some clubs or some shows that you're like, oh yeah, I need to do this because I need to. And then now I'm thinking about, it didn't change anything. I could have done it or not done it. I didn't get better or not. I didn't like improve in my career or anything. It was just, it was a show.
I think it comes to a point where it's quality over quantity.
And that's exactly what I was going to say.
And if we don't really know. So it takes something hopefully not as big as this next time for us to go.
And to your point, Ian, that's exactly how it happens too. You start doing the quantity thing. You're like, as long as I'm busy, my soul is successful. I'm into this. And then, you get so busy doing the quantity that you don't even give yourself the chance to assess
that you're not
doing, that you're not doing quality anymore. So that's
it becomes the law of diminishing returns at some point. You know, where you it becomes a thing where the more you do, then you're like, you're actually getting worse, you know, because it gets to that point where like you have to find what's your balance to be like, okay, I'm doing enough, but I'm still enjoying my life and being happy with what I'm doing at the moment, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Every now and then when one of your comic friends, you know, they'll have that arrogant statement of like, I don't get out of bed for less than $100. And you're like, oh, shut up, you pretentious. And then you think about it, you're like, that's probably a good moral standard to live by. You've earned yourself a free night.
There should be a minimum, you know, like, there's gotta be something it's gotta be more than just money too. It's gotta be, you know, I want to go there and you know,
or even shows like TV stuff or TV, you know, like sometimes it's not like, for me, I've turned stuff that it's not about the money. It's just like, it's not going to work for what I want to do or how I want to, you know, and why I put myself through that.
I've got a couple out there that I'm just like, oh God, why did I say that? comedy.tv shows up and you're just like, oh, it just brings back memories and you're just like, oh, but I don't feel good about myself. $3.
A lot of people might not know the difference, the length of time that can be, there can be between a booking and the gig arriving in your calendar. And the thought we all have. I'm like, what kind of mindset was I in when I agreed to go to El Segundo for $10?
I have had those like on a Thursday where like, I don't know how I agreed to this. I want to get on the plane, you know?
Yeah.
And I've not bought a plane ticket. So then I end up paying more for the plane ticket.
It's happening now.
So what I'm saying is go to stadiums.
I think that's an absolutely awesome thing to do.
But that's a cool idea. Yeah. I mean, I'm going to start doing that whenever I'm in a big city that has a stadium.
I went and saw Vegas play when my last live shows were in Vegas, but with Jim Jeffries. Mm-hmm. And I took him to a Vegas hockey game. It was Vegas and Edmonton. And he's not open to hockey. He's very Australian. I immediately regretted it. Cause I was like, I would have had a better, it was an afternoon game, evening shows. I'm like, I could have had a good time here.
And hockey is such a game that when you see it live, it's like, it's just, it's like 10 times better. Yeah. Like, it's just like, I think it's I think it's to me, like, the sport that when you see it live, you go like, what the heck? Mm-hmm. Like, because you go see basketball and baseball or, you know, football, you go, and I kind of sit, you know, but hockey is like, what the hell is, like, the ice, just even the coldness, like,
you can hear the scraping of the ice and the smashing of the bodies. Ah, it's a great time, man.
It's in the
town. By the way, Ian, what did you think about those Lake Tahoe ones? That was so cool, right?
I thought it was great. I think I love the fact that they're taking risks, and playing on like ice in the middle of nowhere, and mm-hmm. I think it's gonna be more of that, and I think at some point there'll be a certain amount of fans that'll go. It'll be a crazy expensive ticket or some sort of giveaway that helps your team grow, you know, win.
Right.
We're going to the middle of nowhere and you're going to be choppered in, you know, like,
yeah.
I think they got to do that. I was disappointed because they've insisted on doing a couple of these games at noon, and noon is when the sun is at its highest point. And we know that's when it's the hottest, and we're using ice. So let's be smart. Yeah. Because when they did it at Dodger Stadium, they had the exact same problem. Right. Later in the day because of the ice. So I was annoyed by that. That was the only thing I was annoyed by. But I think it's great, and I think hockey was becoming a little too stuffy, and I think the show Spitting Chicklets has helped them break out of the mold a little bit.
Right on.
And Kevin Bieksa being on Hockey Night in Canada is kind of shaking it up. And I like to think that it's, you know, getting a little bit more fun, because I think hockey people are the funniest people in the world. So, Yeah.
I got to tell you guys, I made another mistake when I was dragging non-hockey fans to see Vegas play while we were on the road. So we're talking managers and everything. And I built it up, and I actually pitched. I don't know if you've been to a Vegas game yet, but of course they've got a great reputation for their in-between periods entertainment, because there's so many entertainers in Vegas that sometimes they even get Cirque du Soleil, you know, will descend from the roofs and do a little show at, you know, at their in-between periods. And I told the people about this in my party. I was like, you know, sometimes they get Cirque du Soleil. You never know. Vegas is so full of entertainers. Anyway, on this particular game that I dragged people, non-hockey people to, the in-between periods entertainment was an Elvis impersonator. And and all he did was drag somebody to the audience and tell them that they were going to be married in the next intermission. Oh. And he came back out in the second intermission and did a ceremony. I was embarrassed for the game of hockey that we had this old Elvis impersonator doing this. And I kind of promised everybody it would be Cirque du Soleil.
It's funny that you say you went with Jim Jeffries, because I can't remember if it was you or Glenn Wool, but I was at a Kings game once and I ran into either you or Glenn Wool with Jim.
Oh, right. And was he in a terrible mood?
He was hating, and he was wearing leather pants with a leather jacket. And I was like, why are you dressed like Eddie Murphy to come up?
Yeah.
And Wooly was like, I think it was Wooly. It might have been you, because you both had that crazy hair at that point. And it was just like, I want to do this. You could tell he wanted to break away from Jim.
It might have been Wooly, because I don't remember trying him in Los Angeles. But I've learned my lesson. Like I've learned with a few friends, like I know by now, they're not hockey fans.
Right.
So I'm not going to try to.
Because it's a waste of opportunity of like bringing somebody that you like. I mean, me and JJ, we've gone to like baseball games, and we can easily go there because we both like baseball, and we're gonna. And it's cool. Like I grew up with. Like it's cool to go with somebody that knows the game, or even if they don't know, that are really interested about it. You know, like if they're gonna learn, like, hey, can you explain me what this means?
Or right.
But if you're not gonna like it, then don't go.
I don't know how you can't go to an event and just enjoy the atmosphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. It's some sort of mental block some people have. I mean, I knew nothing about Aussie rules football when I was in Australia, but I went and caught. It was it's a great game.
Right.
Great game. Once you grasp it, and it's so much easier to understand than you'd think. Watching it from the outside, you think, what is going on here? And then once you just learn, oh, no, they can kick, you know, you got to kick, catch only a couple steps, and you're allowed to smoke each other. That's basically all you need to know.
It's basketball, football, and hockey put together. It's a very interesting game. Yeah, no hoops.
Yeah, really fun. And that's, you know, you only get to see these games or get these experiences if you're open to it. So
yeah, you got to be open to it. You got to have fun. It lets you know about people, and there's nothing like seeing somebody get hammered in an event.
yeah. I took a California girl to a California girlfriend to the Halifax Mooseheads.
Does she work at the California Pizza Kitchen?
She does not. California. She's from California.
A California Pizza Kitchen girl.
Yeah, I took a California Pizza Kitchen girl. I took her out of the kitchen. But in the breaks between periods, they had that competition where everybody gets in the Zorb balls and they're trying to push a big foam hockey puck. So they're all smoking each other on the ice. And this was her only hockey experience, but she still thinks now here in LA, she thinks that that's what hockey games are. She thinks, oh, they do the skate thing. But the best bit is when they put on the bubble suits and they smoke each other between. I don't know how the scores go to which team during that one, but that's the part of the game that I like.
Yeah. When the second group of fellas comes out and just runs into each other with those balls, that's when it gets crazy. I got to get back in the kitchen and make some pizza.
these are great, buddy. We're at number six. We all have to do this in our career. This is a question that we're going to want to ask a lot of our guests when we have them on. I see you got a couple more questions in the side too. Thanks, guys. Thanks, guys, for pitching your questions. We will get to you in two more questions. What was your first big move for the sake of your career?
Yeah.
And you said you loaded up something in your head.
Vancouver.
Yeah, Vancouver. So I came home one day. I was working in a gold mine. They'd drill holes and I would load them up with explosives and we would blow them up. I was an explosives assistant, explosive engineer assistant.
I started
out with this dynamite company from the bottom, like where I just packed the trucks with dynamite and they'd go up to the mines.
Did everybody have their fingers?
Not everybody.
Was the company called Acme?
I think there was an Acme, and I got to remember the name of it because it was something. It was almost like a cartoon. It might have been TNT or something. I can't remember. It was as bad as you would think it would be. But I just kind of worked my way up to it, and I got to a point, and I was like, well, I got to go to school if I'm going to go any further. But I was like, I want to be a comedian. So I just came home after making all this money, and it was going into the fall, and we get laid off because all the snow would come down. We wouldn't be able to work. And I said to my father, I said, I'm moving to Vancouver to become a comedian. And my dad just rolled his eyes and all right. And my mom said, okay, have fun. So my dad came. I said, can I get a ride to the airport tomorrow? So I went to the airport, got on a plane.
Like the next day.
The next day, and just got on a plane. And me and my buddy Trent went with me. And then we ended up partying in Vancouver for a year before I even tried to become a comedian. And I never went to school. I just became, you know, started comedy. So,
oh really? Wow. You partied there for a year before you even took the baby steps of like doing your first gig or anything. You were already there.
To be a comedian?
I always wanted to be a comedian. I knew that I would have to have a career at some point. So it was kind of like I was at this and I just went down and I was just like, I don't know. But I still didn't know how to become a comedian. So it wasn't that I just went down to party. I was just like, I got to figure out how to become a comedian because where I was. Nobody was in entertainment, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
So there wasn't anybody I could ask. There was nothing, you know, nobody went that way. And so I went down there and I just had kind of asked a lot of questions for a while, hung out with people. I only went to one comedy show, seen that. And I was like, okay, this is, you know, where it happened.
Wow. Do you remember who you saw?
Yeah, I saw Evan Carter. Do you remember him from Toronto?
He's a very slight
black guy from Toronto, David Bruce and Billy Mitchell.
Right.
And David Bruce had a coffee cup and he was the MC and he kept drinking from the coffee cup. And I just remember being confused. I'm like, why is this guy like, why has he got to drink now? He doesn't understand why he's got to drink. He would drink after every joke. I was like, this doesn't make sense to me. And I was just like, well, this is where it's got to happen. And I was writing and stuff, and then all of a sudden one day one of my friends said, "Hey man, you got to try," and I was like, "Yeah," or I'm going to go to school. So I went on a contest. And
we all have done every contest.
Yeah, give you that pressure.
I went, but I didn't really. So I went and I wrote the jokes on my hand. I was so nervous, I sweat them off. I did impressions of Fish to get away with it because I just didn't have anything.
Yeah.
To do. I'm like, coho, and you know, just and I didn't win. Right. But I thought, oh, I guess that was my shot. I guess I'll go. You know, we'll go.
All right.
Later, did you know?
And the guy that was managing the place, his name is Keith Bale. He happened to say to me, hey, you're really funny. You should come back next week for amateur night. And if he hadn't said that to me, I wouldn't have gone back.
Wow.
I didn't know how it worked at all. So I didn't know. I thought you just got your shot and that was it.
Wow.
You know,
to me, that's why I always believe in signs like of life, you know, and that was life telling you, like, you know, because you did the risk of doing it for the first time. And then that guy telling you, hey, come back. That was life.
Right.
You know, God, whatever you believe in, being like, this is what you're supposed to do. You know,
I remember a couple weeks later seeing some of the guys and go, oh, everybody gets invited back.
Right.
But it's like, those are the little things that, like you said, like if you, that guy wouldn't have said it, you would have gone to study and you forgot about it.
Honest to God, my whole career and life has kind of been kind of that, what you say. Like when I went from Vancouver to New York, I had a gig in Montreal and I took a train from Montreal to New York. I didn't have any place to stay. I had a guy's phone number that said he would put me on stage. That's it. That's how to me, that was, I'm going to New York. Right.
Wow.
Yeah. So right on.
$700 in my pocket, and I got off the train in Penn Station in Manhattan. I'm like, I have no place to stay. I don't know what's going on. Wow. There was a piece of paper on the ground that said youth hostel, $14 a night.
There it is.
I lived there for 3 months.
Wow.
Right.
That's so crazy. Man. I mean, I'm saying. That's signs in life that tell you, because you make the sacrifice of doing it. Like you took the risk and then then life is like, okay, now I'm going to reward you because you took the risk here, stay in this hotel for 14 bucks.
Yeah.
Right. It was funny. I remember it was the comic strip where Lucian Hold had the comic strip and he started putting me on, you know, he paid me on everybody got paid on the table, but I was making like $25 a night. And I was just like, I'm in show business.
Wow.
I got $14 for my rent.
I'm clearing 11 bucks.
This is amazing. Every night, this is insane, right? So, but I would bring these people from the youth hostel. After a while, I'd bring all these. So one night I'd show up with a whole Japanese contingent, all German. They're like, what the hell? Why is it that these weird entourages?
Right.
That was a lot of fun.
That's hilarious. That's awesome.
Can I just ask you, and to take you back to the move to Vancouver, what kind of, so you had your buddy, so after being there for a year and then your buddy went, you got to do this. And I'm guessing it's because you were making notes and you were looking like a guy who was going to do it, but you weren't taking the steps and your buddy said, but what was your living conditions like in that point, in that first move to Vancouver? Were you living in a little shitty?
No, we weren't, because I like I say, I came from working in a gold mine, just banking money.
Right. Okay. Right. Right.
So we had a two. I think I moved a couple of different times, but always nice apartments. You know, I was working like part time at a sign shop, you know, that kind of thing, and just trying to figure it out. But saying I want to be a comedian, I can't figure it out. And going and seeing all my friends played in bands, so I go see them in these clubs in Vancouver and around Vancouver. And then finally somebody said, you got to do it or you got to shut up, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm like,
it's time. So I did it. So
that's so cool.
You we lived do it, man.
The last house we lived in, me and four guys, we lived in it and they sold it as soon as we met. Very Vancouver. They sold it to an Asian company as soon as we moved into it, and nobody collected rent for 8 months.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That's so lucky.
And then they showed up on the eighth month and said, we're here for the rent.
Before the 8 months?
For 8 months.
Oh,
and
shit.
This is the last month. We're tearing it down and we're building a high rise here. Oh. And we said, we don't have your rent.
Yeah, so, I'm sorry.
They didn't care. They're like, okay, well, we had a house. We destroyed the house, like, for our party, because, right, they were turning it down. We like took it with like hammers all over. We just had this house burning party at the end of this lease. Yeah. So much fun. It was just a great time.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, just, in a way, initially I was thinking that's bad timing, but it's actually good timing for you guys at that age to go, that means, yeah, we can destroy this place if it's being, yeah, torn down.
And then I moved downtown, East Van. I moved to East Van and lived down there for the longest time. And then I met some girl, lived with her for a while, and just had a lot of fun in Vancouver, and then ended up in New York. And then I was in New York for 5-6 years. And I started doing some commercials out here. And I just remember we were coming out to LA, and I remember the weather is always the same here. This is fantastic. And then I remember asking my representation at the time, am I allowed to live in LA? And they said, you can live wherever you want. And I said, I'm going to live in LA.
Yeah. Nice. Good choice.
Yeah, I like it. I think I made the right choice. It was weird because some of my friends really blew up,
by staying in New York, you said?
By staying in New York. But I feel, you know, this is nothing's ever easy. And I think I've had a great career, and I'm happy with my quality of life I've gotten out of LA. Mm-hmm.
I often think of the standard of living, you know, after I moved here from London, and I don't try to think of what the sacrifice to my career it was. Instead, I think it's sunshine. I have sun on my cheeks right now because I went to a park yesterday.
Right.
It's February, you know. So I think I love that. I was rained on for 15 years in London.
Right. And the people that come to LA, I'm just like, I don't get, like, you really, there's nothing here that isn't in every other city in like, for bad things, that's in every city. There's nothing more in this city.
Yeah.
And when they complain about, oh, there's too many fake people, I'm like, it's all actors. Yeah, it's all money people in New York, and they treat their towns like shit. They don't put anything up there. Yeah. They don't put anything in the garbage in their lives in that
place. Yeah.
So, you know, so I'm just like, I love living out here.
Yeah, I like LA. I mean, I grew up in DC, Maryland, and you know, even though I like where I grew up, it was great. It was nice, but I definitely like LA more. Obviously, the weather, but just the people here, all the things that you can see, like you said, Ian, it has everything, pretty much. I mean, the only thing that I mean, not even dislike, that the only annoying part of LA is just everything is so far. You know, in terms of the travel, like everything is like, we need to travel. It's always like 4 hours or five hours or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the only thing.
Well, we got 3 airports.
Yes.
Yeah. 3 airports. Yeah, it's and you know, all trade-offs.
If you told me when I was 16 years old that later on in my life I'd be living on the beach in California, it was nothing that I didn't plan this. Like, I wasn't like, I'm going to live in LA. Like, I never once as a kid said I want to live in Los Angeles. You know, I feel like I've lucked out and I love it. Would I like my family to be closer? Of course. That's it.
Yeah,
I hear you there. And that brings us to the final question of our little fast questions round. Have you ever felt that your life was at risk in your job, in your travels, in your job? And I mean, you know, take your pick. This could be a post gig thing, or it can just be a stick up,
an actual plane falling down or something.
So we said Victoria, where I walked into a big fight going on and ended up getting punched in the head. That was after a show. And
really?
But the one time where I was nervous after a show was, I was on stage one night, and it was in the Arlington Improv, which is not a great club, but it's
in Dallas.
Yeah, Addison, the Arlington one. So, and it wasn't very full, and there was this big guy, big black guy, and he was huge, and he was with this girl, and I was, of course, you know, doing my thing where I talked to the crowd, and I just said, and what do you do? He said, I'm a gangbanger, right, like this. And I said, I know two different types of gangbanging. Is it the fun kind, or is it the happy-go-lucky kind, or the mean kind? And he picked up a glass. And he threw it at me.
Wow.
And I seen it coming, and I just happened to step away, and it missed me and hit the brick wall behind me, right?
And it shattered.
No, it didn't shatter. And he was massive. And I said, less shoulders, more squats.
You kept going back to the well.
Yeah, I just and people were going nuts. And he got up and he just ran out of the place. It was so bizarre. Like he ran out of the place. I'm like,
to get a gun or something.
Yeah, yeah. And the bouncers came back in. And they said he got in his car and he drove away. And he left the girl there. Right? He left the girl.
Wow.
And I said, what did he drive away in? He drove away in a purple Porsche. And I was like, oh, he's a wannabe. He's one of those guys that bought a Porsche, but doesn't have enough money to pick the color he wants. So he had to get what was left over. And she was just like having a great time and thought he was a loser. But honestly, I thought he's coming back at some point during the show. Yeah, I remember that afterwards, the club manager is like, we'll give you a ride home, back to the hotel. But I'd walk every night and I was like, he's not taking this away from me. So I insisted on walking back. And I just remember walking back, like, I'm like, I probably should have got it right. But yeah. I'm like, there's no fucking, yeah.
Wow.
I think that might have been the closest, you know, I could have been like pretty, you know, I could have been killed on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you honestly never know the crazies all the time. It's never obvious who's going to be the crazies. But
I try.
When they unveil themselves.
I say it, you know, in the show now, I say, don't be offended. Like, don't come to a comedy show and say, I can't believe, you know, like you gotta, like, don't please, if you're going to enjoy me, don't be offended by what I'm going to say. Have fun with me. I don't do anything to be above you. And that's why if people are doing that, then I can see why you're offended, but I feel we're the same level. So please, you know, have fun with me. So
that's great.
100% brother. Yeah. What we've decided to, we're ending our podcast on one final question. I mean, it's pretty straightforward, but before you go, we were just wondering, well-traveled soul that you are, do you have one piece of travel advice? I know you mentioned something that your mother said earlier in the podcast. I can't remember now what your mom said to you, but do you have a great piece of travel advice that you like to hand down to people or let them know?
I think it's actually from my mom, and it's a great piece of advice. Try to fly on the national airline so you get to know the people before you get there, and they'll know things about that country that, you know, other airlines won't because they're not from there, and they will tell you some things, and you'll have a little bit of travel. Like, I hate when somebody tells me about a country and they've never been there.
Yeah, that's the greatest thing. Right?
Yeah.
I remember I during the pandemic, I had to get rid of a friend because he was telling me about how this war was going on in South Africa. And I'm like, have you ever been to South Africa? And he's like, no. I'm like, well, you might want to shut up. All right.
Yeah. Travel.
Just traveled. Yeah. Don't take it for granted.
It's also like, because also travel, it's like, not that you learn so much about other people, you learn so much about yourself.
Yeah. You know? I've traveled so much it doesn't happen, but I used to love going to a place that I had never been and just scaring the shit of myself and not being prepared for it, you know. It just
fun.
Well, awesome advice.
You make friends everywhere too when you travel.
Man, that's great advice, brother. Great answers. You've kicked ass for us, man.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. You guys are two of the funniest guys out there and just nice human beings, which is awesome.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, Ian. Thank you very much. And yes, follow Ian on all his social media, Ian Bag. Thank you very much for having us here, and stand by with JJ and Francisco.
See you guys.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.